Rasping and punning. Like, I had no idea just how punny you were. And I don't know if it's like, A, I'm nervous affect, if you're naturally funny, or if it's heavily scripted.
Well, the tableau tip battle was definitely heavily scripted. And that was because we only had a minute to present our tips. I don't heavily script my natural life, though. Just tip battles.
But is it also full of puns?
Yeah. probably more than the average person. My dad's going to be really excited to hear us talking about puns because I get all of that from him.
Oh, wow. That is a dad thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I should know. My girls are, my oldest, it just turned 12, so she's now old enough to be ashamed of when I do stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's that much more fun for me. I also had I wore this pair of sunglasses at the conference, but they're like yellow neon frames with pink lenses that are polarized. So they're like semi-reflective.
Yeah.
And they also got destroyed over the 4th of July weekend. So I have a new pair coming, but like, she's mortified by these glasses. She's like, don't wear these. I'm like, you don't understand how many compliments I get on these everywhere. She's like, but they're so embarrassing. And I'm like, the fact that they embarrass you makes me love them more. Like,
yeah,
you're sending me the wrong
say,
message.
If I knew something is going to know something's going to embarrass someone, I'm going to do it even more.
You're going to lean into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to lean in.
Like, why would you give me this ammunition? You clearly are a tween. Like, you haven't thought this through.
I tell my husband that all the time because he'll say something like, oh, it annoys me so much when you do this. And then that's just an invite for me to do it even more, to push that button.
Just buckle up for more of that. Like,
exactly.
Fool. Oh, wow. So, yeah, it's great to be talking with you more because I had so much fun getting to hang out with you some in Vegas at the beginning of May. And
yeah, same.
I realized, like, I hadn't really ever talked with you very much, and I didn't really know you that well. So it's always a delight to get to know people that you sort of tangentially know, but haven't actually met, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, I wanted to, you know, just, I'm like, I'm greedy. Like, how do I get more Lisa in my life? I'm like, oh, I know. I tell her we're doing a podcast, and then for some reason, she thinks that's like an honor and a good idea.
Yeah.
And then, like, I've got her for like the better part of an hour.
And this is not even going to be published, not going to go anywhere. It's just you're recording.
No, it's not. It's not even recording right now. Like, yeah, this is you've totally been gaslit into a conversation that's ostensibly a podcast, which is my entire podcasting career. I'm like, you know, I'd really like to talk to this person. But if I just tell them, hey, you want to call me sometime? Like, no one does that. We're adults now. We just text. But if I tell them we're recording it, then it seems like something worth doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're on.
I like it. I like the strategy.
So you are an Iron Vis champion, obviously.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
It is. It's a thing.
That's a thing. But I think when you came on the Iron Vis scene, you were still fairly new to sort of, you know, Tableau in public, right?
Yeah, I was. So I wasn't really new to Tableau. I've been using it for work for a really long time.
Yeah.
But in terms of kind of finding it as a more creative, fun outlet, I was pretty brand spanking new.
I think in a way that was really great for you because I see so many Iron Viz contestants and champions who, after they do Iron Viz, it's like, because it's so intense, you know, afterwards they're just like, I'm done. Like,
done.
Maybe not forever, but like, especially with the sort of volume with which they produce stuff. But for you especially, like, you really, like, that just seemed like the beginning. Like, you were just getting started and you've had so many fun and great ideas since then.
Yeah, it kind of was. I mean, there was definitely a period right after where there was a little bit of a hiatus because it is pretty exhausting. You're doing quite a bit of work in there in a very truncated amount of time. So there was a period where I was like, okay, I'm vizzed out. But yeah, then all the ideas just kept, you know, accumulating in my brain. And it's like, well, I gotta get them out. So yeah, it kind of was just the start of everything.
What's like, have you ever had like a really weird idea that you just don't know how to pull it off or just are never going to get the data for it?
Yeah, all the time. My problem is not a lack of ideas. It's too many ideas and not knowing when I should not go after it. There are so many projects that I've started that are so unrealistic in terms of, yeah, getting the data, or the data is just too insane or it's too much. It's never going to work. And I'm like, no, I'm going to try it. And then hours later, days later, I'm like, well, this was silly.
I have Jeff Schaefer trying to push me to collect the John Wick kill data from John Wick 4, which I just don't have the heart to do, but I'm probably going to end up doing anyway.
You got to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm, it's at this point, like, it's a real mixed bag for me, whether more John Wick movies come out, because on one hand, I love John Wick movies. And on the other hand, I know, like a very small but passionate handful of people are going to emotionally blackmail me into like collecting the data minute by minute and by method of kill, which it sounds very grisly to talk about this, but I mean, John Wick is essentially like a Warner Brothers cartoon for 30-year-olds. So I'm not really that upset.
I am going to tell you something and you might hang up with me right now. Okay. Is I have not seen the John Wick movies.
That's fine.
I've seen about like a half hour of the first one. And that's
so
about it.
Just around the time it starts to get wacky.
Like, yeah.
Because it starts off like very, very grisly and grounded. You're like, this movie's depressing.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, there's a dead dog already. Okay.
Yeah, it's like
we're
dead,
done here.
Dead dog, dead wife. It's like this.
Yeah. Dead
this,
wife too. But
real fun. And then not only is he like an assassin, but he's an assassin with like their own cryptocurrency. And you're just like, what is happening now? Yeah. It's, I mean,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's look, it's a lot to ask. But if you buy if you buy in, I mean, I'm not saying John Wick is high art. Like, I think when people say like Zach really likes John Wick, I'm like, yeah, I fully acknowledge that this is silly and ridiculous. Like, I'm not comparing this to Shakespeare in the Park. Like, but in terms of what it is, which is pop culture action schlock, it's really great. So, you know, I'll take more of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have your own pop culture schlock. I mean, you are very into like, I mean, you've got your great Seinfeld viz and stuff.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's kind of my wheelhouse, I feel like. You know, at work, I work with a lot of data around student equity and inclusion and diversity, and it's a bit of a heavy topic. And so I feel like whenever I'm, you know, playing around with Tableau in my spare time, it's usually going to be something kind of light and fun and pop culture that, you know, brings me joy.
I 100% feel that. And that's also my lane, like 98% of the time, because I used to work at St. Jude for, you know, 13 years and it's heavy. It's like, it's heavy, the topic that I deal with at work every day. So if I'm going to do this, you know, extracurricularly, like if my day is spent dealing with sort of heavy social and life-threatening topics, I'd rather do something that brings me joy and maybe someone else will like it. If not, that's okay. It's really for me. Like, honestly, when I started making stuff that was, I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to impress anyone with this. I'm just doing this because it's what I want to do. People like my stuff way more than when I was trying to impress people.
That was my entire Iron Viz feeder entry, my RuPaul Viz. I remember I'm collecting the data and I'm having a lot of fun and I'm watching all these lip syncs. And my husband was like, is there a lot of overlap between RuPaul lovers and data lovers? And I was like, I don't know. I don't care. Like, this isn't for them. This is for me.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, I've covered all sorts of ridiculous topics. Mm-hmm. Like, I just put up, I reposted a Nathan's hot dog eating contest thing that I did. Like, I think I did it. I was doing it anyway, but then I published it as an Iron Viz entry, knowing it had no shot. But I'm like, it's in the range. Maybe I'll get a pin out of this. But like, I don't personally care about the Nathan's hot dog eating contest at all. Like, but it's insane. Like, it's a crazy thing. It's like these people get up there and they just shove hot dogs in their face for between 10 and 12 minutes, which matters because they list the total count of hot dogs, but they don't correct for the time. So I was like, like as a data person, I'm like, so wait a second, like, is this guy really that good if they keep changing the time? And then I look back in history, I'm like, it used to be 3 minutes long. Well, maybe some of those older contestants were like cramming in more hot dogs per minute, like maybe, you know. So it's like, it starts going to really weird places where you start, I mean, it is Seinfeld, where it's like a Viz About Nothing, where you find a total niche topic that no one should ever care about. And you're like, yeah, I got to get to the bottom of this just for myself.
Yep. That's usually most of my business. Like, I have a question, like, I have to answer this now that it's popped into my brain.
Do you have a data set you've revisited more than once, like the gift that keeps on giving? Or is it kind of you have like a topic that fascinates you and you kind of do it and like then you feel satiated and you can move on?
Most of the time I'm satiated. I will say, though, with the Seinfeld Viz I just put out, that was not the original intent. That wasn't my original vision. I started out wanting to do the entire universe of Seinfeld. And I started like, okay, well, I'll collect the data on the relationships. And then I started to branch out and I collected it all and was like, this is a scattered mess. So I don't feel completely satiated because I didn't, you know, hit that final goal that I had in my brain, but maybe one day I'll go back to it.
I'll tell you what I really love about that one. And this is going to sound so silly, but the drop shadows look so nice. Like it's such like a designer thing. Like I really love that you did drop shadows.
Well,
and
thank you.
Against the gray background, it really feels like they're popping off. Like it looks like you're looking at something on a museum wall with pegs behind it. So things are just barely three-dimensional.
And oh, like, awesome.
Wow,
well, I'm glad that
so
you
cool.
noticed and appreciated it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's look, we're all nerds here. The dozen of people that are going to listen to this are all part of the same brother and sisterhood, where we're obsessing about weird tiny details.
All the little details.
But yeah, I saw that one, and I actually also did you use Tristan's network diagram generator to create that? Yeah.
Yes.
I recently did a Pete Davidson, which I just released today, but I've been sitting on a little while just because I don't know when to put this out. But it's Pete Davidson's Galaxy of Stars. So it's all the famous people he's dated and then the famous people that they've dated. And I was going to take it like an extra level, but at a certain point, like especially with the network diagram, it just becomes so cumbersome and unwieldy. And then it loses cohesion and you can't really tell a story with it because it just becomes too many. Like I literally have a Taco Bell one above my head that I made of the Taco Bell
it.
Menu.
I love it.
And it's like, when you look at that, it becomes really hard to make anything out of it. It's sort of an abstract art piece. And if you lose Pete Davidson at the middle of the Pete Davidson network diagram, then what are you doing here? So I kept it to 2 degrees removed from Pete Davidson, which is still an incredible amount of famous people he has either dated or dated someone that he dated.
I don't get it. I don't get the allure of Pete Davidson.
I
sorry,
don't
Pete Davidson, if
either.
You're listening to this.
I'm less sorry because Pete Davidson seems to be doing great for himself in most capacities.
He's doing all right.
But like, I don't know if it's a celebrity thing, but like, I think there's like, oh, Pete dated Kate Beckinsale. There must be something going on there. I'm intrigued. You shouldn't be. Like, I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm not looking, but like, what's the deal with Pete Davidson? Like, seriously,
I don't know.
Like anyone let me know. Like, I've never seen something where I thought it was better for Pete Davidson being in it. And the only exception might be James Gunn did like a Suicide Squad movie the other year and Pete Davidson is in the beginning of it. And you're like, oh God, I'm going to have to watch Pete Davidson in this whole movie. And in the first 3 minutes of the movie, they're doing like a beach landing thing. And he walks to the front of what's supposed to be a covert mission and loudly announces that they're there and that he's the informant that turned everyone else in and then gets shot in the face by the people he's trying to defect to. And that's the only time I was like, Pete Davidson nailed this. Like that was like.
He killed it in that one role.
Because up until that, like, and he's being very Pete Davidson. So you're like, oh no, like how much of this am I going to have to endure? And then it's, you know, they quickly take Pete Davidson off the board and you're like, that's the way to use Pete Davidson as a total tease. Like, guess what? You're going to see for the next 2 hours. Psych, he's gone now. Don't you feel relieved? Yeah.
That's
so.
The only way to use him.
It's the perfect application. So Pete Davidson is the character you put in the beginning of the movie so that the rest of the movie feels better by comparison to the part that had Pete Davidson in it.
Yeah, agreed.
This got dark fast, but it was worth it.
You know, I was just realizing too, I think Pete Davidson's in a Taco Bell commercial, isn't he?
I think he's in a Taco Bell commercial. He's also in Smart Water commercials that I see at the movies.
Okay, I was thinking you've got your Taco Bell viz above you, and then you've got a Pete Davidson network. You got to somehow bring the two together.
Oh my gosh, I mean it's a lot. I mean I've already done way too many network diagrams, and so much of it is like I was looking at my Tableau Public recently, and I have to scroll down like 5 columns to get past mostly network diagrams.
Yeah.
And so much of it is just because once I realized they were a viable option, there were so many different things that I thought would be cool to connect. Mm-hmm. That don't really work in most other formats. So it's really fun to experiment with, but I've got several under the hood that I just never released because they don't work. Like And you don't know if it's going to work or not until you've basically already done it. So yeah. I made
Agreed.
One.
I just tried to make one of Barbie's World. And Barbie's World is crazy. There are people all over the place. She's got family, friends, boyfriends. They've got siblings. They've got siblings who are dating Barbie's friends. It's a mess. And then you've got characters with the same name. They're like three Beckys. I was like, okay, I can't. It was too much.
Becky one, also Becky. Becky yeah. The third.
This Becky was in Barbie and the Sensations. And this Becky is Robert's sister. And this Becky is Kelly's friend. You're like, okay, this it was just way too much. But yeah, it didn't work because it was too many people.
So I did one on there's this editor for Empire Magazine who writes some pop culture books. So he wrote one called Wild and Crazy Guys, and it was about like early SNL stars and SCTV, which was like Canadian SNL, and how those people sort of became movie stars. And I made a viz off of it. It's actually the first network diagram I ever made. And I'll show it to you. Oh, yeah, and everyone else at home can imagine it. So Wild and Crazy Guys is, you can see the size of the star compared to how many movies they were in. And there's a lot of good connections between them. And I added Robin Williams for good measure just because he was of that era.
Yeah.
But you can see like it's a great network diagram because yeah. there's a lot of connections, which is really what you're hoping for. He has a second book, which just came out, which is called Last Action Heroes. And I don't think I even have it up on my Tableau Public. I made it and I never deployed it because action stars in the 1980s, like Schwarzenegger, Stallone, and I don't know, like Jackie Chan and Jean-Claude Van Damme, they never cross over because they're all like so alpha and so heavy, yeah, like so expensive. True. They don't show up together. So I never deployed that. And I also made one on Edgar Wright movies that I'm showing you that for the most part, he only has four or five people that have appeared in movies together. And it's like three movies. So his other movies are just constellations out to themselves. So it wasn't a great application of a network diagram, but you don't really know that until you've already made it.
I think that in itself is interesting though. Like, yeah, maybe there's not a ton of networking, right? But I think that's cool to see the stars kind of off to the side.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't have too many vizzes that I've just never completed, but I do have one that I owe Britt Stainer, who, you know, Tableau community manager, mm-hmm. where he and I were talking one day, and I don't know why I thought of this, but I'm like, do you think Weird Al has many songs that like got more listens than the original song? And he's like, yeah.
I bet.
Did he? So I tried to get Spotify data, and Spotify doesn't allow you to really access that. So Britt kind of ran with the idea and did some data cultivation off of YouTube to find the Weird Al versions of songs and the original versions. He pulled this data set together, and I have put together the shell of a viz, and I have no idea where to go with it. Like, it's everything I've come up with is way more boring than the topic itself. And it's just so disappointing because there are some cases where Weird Al songs have performed like at better or on par with the original. And it's kind of shocking because he's like been around 40 years.
It's like a
quirky, weird thing. But at the same time, it's sort of like an honor if he does your song or whatever. Yeah. But it's like, so the fact that he's like even in the ballpark of any of these songs is kind of crazy because how often does he choose a song that no one's ever heard of? Like, he's going to pick songs that you would at least recognize.
Right. Oh, I hope you finish that viz. I'd love to see it.
Maybe I need to show you the in progress. Maybe we need to collaborate on it. So it'll be a three-way collaboration. But yeah, it's like I've always appreciated like sort of how so much of your stuff is very whimsical. Like, you put yourself into stuff a lot, and it's very thoughtful in that way. And it's interesting how you can see like different people's, like, you can sometimes identify who made something just by how it's made. And I think you have a distinctive enough style that many of your visuals that you put together, you know, I can say like, oh, that's Elisa.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Like, I've been told that once or twice, but I'm like, I don't think that's accurate. But then again, like, especially since I've mostly done network diagrams for, you know, 6 months.
Yeah, if I see a network diagram, I'm like, oh, that's Zach's.
maybe there. Oh, wow. So what are you looking forward to, like, working on this next year, like in terms of personal projects? Do you have anything lined up right now, or are you in that in-between phase?
I think I'm in an in-between. Like I said, I always have like 18 ideas in my head, but it's whether or not I find the time to sometimes collect the data, which is usually like the most tedious part of it all, or just time. I have a 1-year-old, so finding time is tricky. It's pretty much anytime he's sleeping, I'm playing with Tableau. So
yeah, I've always said my time was, and it's different now that my kids are older, like they're a lot more independent. But especially when they were younger, my time was the 45 minutes between when I tuck them in and my wife is like, either come watch TV or I'm falling asleep right now. So it's that was my window. And normally it was really a substitution, like for watching, you know, playing a video game or watching TV myself. But I don't know. It's a creative act. It's fun. It's relaxing. It's like any other hobby.
Exactly. I think that's it. It's a hobby now. And my husband, when I first started, was always like, why are you always working? You know, because I kind of started playing around with it during COVID, where there was nothing going on. So it was like the entire weekend, I'd just be sitting there on Tableau. He's like, you've worked all weekend. I was like, no, this is fun. Like, I'm playing around.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I compare it to like doodling or painting or anything like that. And while some of the doodles and painting things we make might look like something someone would see at work, it's because it's your thing. And it's because, you know, you're doing it on your own, you know, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I honestly, I almost wrote a blog post about this the other day. I still might, but I wrote a blog post last week about, I've written about like Data Viz Mavericks before, and like the idea of a Maverick over a rock star, where rock stars are like solo acts and they don't really make more rock stars. And when they disappear, they generally leave like a huge hole behind. Mavericks, like, especially if you've seen Top Gun Maverick, it's like, may not necessarily fit the mold, but can bring others along with them and sort of encourage and build up others. And I was thinking about the idea of like Maverick and Iceman. And I wrote a post about this where, you know, it's really the two things you need to have like a successful team, besides obviously solid leadership, is you need people that are rule makers and rule breakers. You need people that can set standards and encourage, like, you know, sound foundations. And you also need others to sort of push that standard forward and challenge the norm and come up with new ideas. Because if you have nothing but Mavericks, obviously it's chaos. Yeah. And if you have nothing but Icemen, you're going to fall behind and you're never going to, you know, be able to keep up. So finding that balance between the two, and, you know, eventually you play beach volleyball in jeans because the shirts were too restrictive, but the jeans were just right.
That's all we do here in San Diego, is just play beach volleyball.
I assumed, like, and we'll obviously all be doing that next year.
Yeah, you'll see come May.
When we come in May, at those undefined dates, which may or may not be 3 days.
Yeah, which, well, let's hope it's at least 3 days.
At least 3 days for all, you know, for if Ryan Ate is listening.
Yes.
And Mark Benioff, who clearly listens to this podcast all the time.
I assume so, yeah.
And we'll say Will Perkins because he likes that I mention him in every episode now, because he can say that he's living in my head rent free.
Yeah, yeah.
And for anyone that somehow stumbled upon this podcast, not knowing anything that we're talking about, like, how did you make it like 24 minutes into this thing with us name dropping names that mean absolutely nothing to you? But But yeah, I was going to say, I consider a lot of the stuff you make art. And
thanks.
And I think that's a tricky thing, because I think that, and this was the blog post I was going to write, but I'm unsure how to phrase it, and we'll work through this together. And if you worry that you're going to get like splash damage here, just like slowly back away and go silent and you'll be fine.
The Homer Simpson back into the bushes.
Right. Like, if I'm fine asking Kyle if I'm a bear or not, which still has not been answered, Kyle. So my thing about it is, we talk about art and data art and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously we have the Information is Beautiful Awards coming out soon. And I was thinking about the question of art. And I think one of the problems I have with art is we think of artists making art. And I think we have it backwards. So I think maybe culturally, not, I'm talking data people specifically, I'm saying in general, like, we think of the artist and they're sort of, you know, they have thoughts that are well above yours. They often have a quirky look or outlook on life, often have substance issues or are depressed. You know, their message is incomprehensible. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've sort of created, like, perceptually a class of person that makes art versus, oh, that's art, you're an artist.
Yeah,
you know,
that's like, true.
And I think a lot of it comes down to defining what is art too, which is maybe the trickier question. But I, you know, like having gone to MoMA this past year and stuff like that and looked at it there, I saw a lot of stuff, and I actually saw many data art pieces there, including like Dear Data and stuff like that. And it's like, I've seen many friends make many things that were just as artistic as this every single day, but we yeah. don't consider any of them artists because they are maybe, I don't know, are we all just more like data practitioners than sometimes we make art, or are we artists that do data? I don't know. It's something I'm ruminating on, but trying to separate the idea of art from being an artist, you know, like, you know, you don't have to be an artist to make art, but if you make art, you're an artist.
Yeah, I like that. Because I think there's a lot of things out there, like a lot of it that I see that I think, oh my gosh, this looks like art, like you said. But yeah, I guess we aren't really, I would never call myself an artist.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, there's so many chefs that don't want to be called a chef. Like they still call themselves like, I'm a cook. And it's like, yeah. Well, what's the difference? Like they feel that chef is pretentious or that chef is presumptuous or, you know, I don't know. Like it's one of those things. And I don't know, like I would love for people to discuss this. And maybe I still will put out a post and maybe I'll draw some heat for that. Like it's fun every now and then to be in trouble. Like, why not? Like there's good trouble to be had. Like, so
I don't think you would draw heat for that.
No, like, do you have any ideas that I could do to draw heat? Like, is there anything like,
I'll just think about that.
Yeah. Like just slip me a DM about that. Like I have an idea how you can really get in trouble with a lot of people. You know, not that I'm looking for that, but it happens every now and then. So it's good for my, it's good for my reputation to be mildly interesting, but
just mildly,
just not mildly. No, not too much. It's clearly I'm not like, look, I mean, if I really wanted to get in trouble, like I would say like, hey, Andy Kriebel's selling links that he posts for free also, and you could just follow him and see those same links.
For that.
And I'm not saying like just follow Andy and get the links, which anyone could, because the people that are going to buy that don't already know Andy and don't follow Andy. So it's actually a different audience. And I think it's kind of clever in that regard, because those people aren't going to, you know, put in the like the long stretch of attention span and work to follow him and pick the stuff up over time. Instead, he's offering it as like a one-time package. Would I buy it? No. But like if you were, you know, early in your career and didn't really know a lot of stuff, and he's obviously very high up, it might be something that you consider doing. Like, would it deliver the same value if you didn't put in the work? I don't know, but that's not my thing to worry about.
Yeah, I think if I were just now jumping into Tableau, I would buy it. I would do it. I would probably convince work to buy it for me.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you can get work to expense stuff. I mean, I have a stack of 4 Tufte books that I read during a study hall before his class and have skimmed, but like they're not really like value added. It's more of going back to that idea of data art. Like if you're very into the idea of discussing a lot of these topics in details, but not a lot of like rubber meets the road, like there's a lot to be had in those books. Like if you just really love the idea of talking about data, which I guess I do because I'm doing this. But yeah, it's like, it's not for me. I'm not going to sit around and read that. I'm terrible with data books, honestly. Like I have a few books I'm reading for friends right now so I can publish reviews for them. But beyond that, like, I'm not really great at reading long form data stuff. I've done it a few times, but I struggle. And I mean, I was recently, you know, one of the publishers, I'll say it, Pact, asked me if I would write like a ChatGPT for Tableau book. I'm like, no, because like, first of all, like, I don't really.
It'll be obsolete as soon as you publish it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't have a lot of respect for them as a publisher. And also it's like, hey, for $3,000, would you like to spend the next 6 months of your life doing this? Like, no. But also, it's ChatGPT, which changes on like a
every day,
weekly, hourly, if not daily basis. Yeah. Like, how many times would I start this book? Like, if I really wanted to do this, I would just do blog posts, or I even do Twitter posts. Yeah. Like, hey, you know, use it to figure out what a calculation means if you don't know. Like, it's great for that. You know, it don't ask it like, you know, who was Iron Viz champion in like 2001. It's not great for that.
It doesn't know.
Like, it'll make up people or tell you Andy won, which I think I think like there was an example someone published where like I think Neil published that, and it said that Andy won 1 year or something when he hadn't.
Yeah.
Just because it's looking to connect words and ideas and stuff. Yeah. But for like math type functions, it's really great. But, you know, you don't spend 6 months of your life writing a book on something that's immediately going to be obsolete. No. Like, that's silly.
No, that is silly. Maybe you could have ChatGPT write it for you.
I had ChatGPT help me write blog posts.
There you go.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's great for when you have a bunch of ideas and you're trying to organize them. And you express your idea as thoroughly as you can and say, help me rewrite this. And you look at its draft and you take the stuff that you liked and you take the stuff that it re-edited. But like, don't ask it for like anything substantive.
No.
Like, it's a calculator and it's a like editor. Like, that's as far as it can go right now. And it's not Skynet yet.
No. I'm just really glad I'm not a teacher right now with all of these things out there for kids to just cheat their way through.
If I were a teacher, I would be cheating my way through also right now.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, as a you know, analyst and stuff, I really advocate for people checking out stuff like that. And I understand it can be like weird or scary or whatever. But like, look, this is just another tool. Like, I understand people are afraid of, you know, AI replacing their jobs and stuff like that. But like, that's not something you can really do anything about or think about right now. But the reality is, this thing is an assistant right now, and it could be a great assistant to you if you've got good applications for it. I was writing some calculations the other day, and I had to do some weird time-based calculations, and I was stuck, and I wasn't getting the outcome I wanted, and I was iterating, and I'm like, I'm going to replace stuff with some dummy names, and I'm going to plug it in and see what it gives me. And then it came out really well. Eventually, but it's also great at accepting feedback because it does iterate. So you can plug stuff in and say, hey, that was wrong. It gave me an error, or that's not right. It did this. And it's like, oh, I see. And then it takes it around. So it's great, especially when you work from home like I do, where you can't lean over and show someone, hey, what's wrong with this?
Yeah. Yeah. That is kind of the drawback of working from home now, is you can't just turn around and ask a coworker for something. Although there are plenty of pros to working from home.
Yeah, it's let's see, like downsides, going from walking 15,000 steps a day to 4,000.
Yeah.
Upsides.
Oh, you get 4,000, I get like 1,500 some days.
Wow, yeah. It's amazing how like I can eat better and less and still like, it's like, wow, you're just struggling just due to lack of physical activity.
Yeah.
And while I do go for walks with David like a couple times a week, that's a lot less fun in Memphis in July when it's like 95 degrees and humid during the day.
No, I would not want to be walking in that.
Well, we go walk in the woods because it's like they have like boarded up trails back there. But then it's just like you're in a swamp because it's just like all the humidity is trapped in the forest. So, it's
there's no winning.
No, it's unlike San Diego.
Yeah, you got to come here.
Got to go to San Diego where it's all winning, just not with real estate. Like it's.
Yeah, you're not winning when it comes to rent and mortgage payments.
Not so much, but hey, like that's what you're getting for that sea breeze and, you know, it's not true. Living in the desert like Los Angeles.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
So what did you have any like real big inspirations when you were first sort of coming online publicly? Like, I know you used Tableau for many years, like on your own, like inside your organization and stuff. And obviously whenever you're doing that, you've got your colleagues and stuff like that, that you sort of, you know, you feed off of each other and you learn and grow together. But like, what was it like when you first started discovering like the larger public community?
It was pretty overwhelming, honestly, because, you know, you've been kind of in your bubble at work for a long time. And then all of a sudden you see what people are doing on public and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything about Tableau. Like, I thought I was good at this, but I don't know. And you see, you know, so many different designs and different, you know, ways to do things. I think when I first started kind of getting more creative, I feel like Judith Becker was a really big influence. I was obsessed with her vizzes. I thought they were super cool in terms of design. So she was probably someone that I would, you know, peruse there. Her public profile often to get ideas and inspiration. Technically though, I feel like the Flairlage twins were like my biggest go-to people. Even, you know, if you're using one of their templates, I would go in and I would try to figure out what they were doing to learn. So even if you're just, you know, throwing your data into a template and you still examine it, I was still figuring stuff out and learning. So they were huge in my learning.
I think that's a good point. Like, and I can definitely see you did in some of your profile. Like, you had your first Tabstract and stuff like that, where you were very image heavy as a background and stuff. I think it's interesting to discuss that because it, you know, in terms of influences and stuff, there can be both technical influences and stylistic influences. Like, obviously, there are people that I really look up to, like Brian Moore, technically,
oh my gosh,
is insane, or like Sam Parsons. Like, the two of them create things that I can't wrap my head around. Like, I remember when I saw what Sam's presentation with Simon Beaumont at teleconference this year. And he did showed like a proportional brushing, which is, you know, when you hover on it, it's like it show it, it and I like I took a image of it. I put it in my Google Keep. Yeah. Like I'm like, why has no one ever done this before? And then he shows a fully formed band with like a gradient background inside a tooltip. And
gorgeous.
I'm just like, what am I even doing here? Like, why do I make anything?
He is a technical and stylistic influence, I feel like. When I found out that he was one of my competitors in Iron Viz, I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is going to be great. Like, I'm going to look like a fool because he's just so technically skilled and advanced.
Who's the
and
fool
Pradeep
now,
too.
Sam?
I mean, he's like this design genius. Like, what does he have? Like the third most Viz is favorited on Tableau Public.
You came in as such an underdog, and I'm totally joking about Sam. Like, you came in as such an underdog because you were so relatively, like, you were like an unknown commodity, right? Mm-hmm. And like the two of them, Pradeep makes some of the most elegant business dashboards I've ever seen on Tableau Public. And Sam is like a hacker with a paintbrush.
Right, exactly.
And like you're up against the two of them. And I mean, that tells you like how Iron Viz every year can really be anyone's game, because there's really no telling what someone's going to bring to the table, especially, you know, having a month to sort of prep and, you know, work through the ideas and stuff like that. It really evens the playing field in a lot of ways, especially considering you're going to have 20 minutes to assemble your pieces live.
Yeah.
That really puts a lot of constraints on someone like Sam, who is going to go heavy into a lot of deep calculations and sort of wacky bendy shapes, or Pradeep, who is really like meticulous about, like, you know, Figma elements and curvy things. And, you know, and that really, you know, makes it a more even playing field, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because if it was like a do whatever you want for, you know, a month, and you don't have the time constraint, I don't think I would come close to anything Sam or Pradeep would produce.
Well, you know, it's I think that's why everyone really loves it, because it's especially like if you're a bit nerdy, like those of us that are listening to this podcast and not discovering it accidentally and listening for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, why are you still here? Like, what is Iron Viz? What is this talking? You know, what's a podcast? You know, it's really cool to just be able to see the creativity, the passion, the innovation, and the stories people find. Like, I thought Brittany's story this past year at Iron Viz was really interesting because she looked for like the stuff that wasn't there in the story and that was kind of sketch and sus, because so many of us in the work data that we work with every day, like if you just took it at face value, like, oh, this is going to be complete and good, everything's going to be fine, you're going to get like sucker punched so many times when, you know, it's like, hey, you know, FY24 is up by this much. And it's like, you know, we didn't enter values for like December and November of last year. You're like, oh, okay.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like even looking at the story, like, hey, some of these places that have really great metrics, it's because they set their goals to like nothing. And it's like, we did it. And it's like, yeah, it's like I set my weight loss goal to gain 5 pounds. Like, I'm killing it. Like,
got it. Yeah, nailed it. That's
work from home.
But yeah, yeah, I had all the stories this year at NIRVIS were really good. And especially with a data set like that, it's, I don't know, I feel like the data sets have gotten a little bit more depressing over the last few years.
Yeah, I agree.
So to go in and find a story and kind of tell it and uplift people is, I think, getting more difficult.
You know, I understand why they do it, because I think Tableau wants to make something that feels important. But also in terms of marketing this thing, like, market it on the fun, because if you want people to really engage with this tool, and I mean, really to get really good at it, you have to have some sort of community, whether or not it's like sort of the DataFam online community or something else. Like, you have to find some way to drive yourself to keep going. And I know that's like my personal brand, like, make it fun so you keep doing it. But like, I think there's some ways to mix it up, and I think there's ways to have some fun with Iron Viz and maybe change the format slightly. I know people have complained that like the feeder competition is like a long form entry, like it's like running a marathon to compete for the 40-yard dash.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be interesting for like Iron Viz itself. Like, what if in addition to providing like the data set, you said on Iron Chef, you said, and here's the thing, and here's the mystery. Like, you can't use this, you have to use these or something like that. Like, no LOD calculations, or you must use LOD calculations, or no outside image, you know, stuff like that. Like, throw in like two or three like random things as sort of a limiter, because I find my creativity is challenged the most both at work and personally when I have like limitations on stuff. Like, this has to be something that could be handed off to, you know, to anyone and they can understand it. I'm like, okay, so how do I make something that, you know, someone that doesn't even know what this is supposed to be can pick it up and understand it?
Yeah,
you know?
Agreed. That would be cool if they did something like that.
Yeah. And also Andy's shoes didn't pop on screen this year. So Andy, like, what's up with that? Like, you know,
yeah, he's losing it.
He's losing it. I was very disappointed.
Ugh. So that's a great jacket, though.
I know, like Andy can pull off ridiculous clothing better than most people. So I envy him on that front. Are you planning on doing any more tip battles? So I know you were the champion of tip battle at a Tableau conference this year, and obviously you definitely won on best puns.
Thank you.
But what was it like preparing for that in the first place? I you seem like a sucker for punishment. You know, doing both Iron Viz and tip battles, which are
100%,
you know, great opportunities to feel stressed out publicly.
Yeah, apparently I enjoy that. No, I know Jennifer and Danuski sent me a message and invited me to do it. And my first reaction was, no, I'm not going to do that. Why would I want to do that? And I texted my friend about it. And then a couple days later, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And my friend was like, I think we both knew from the beginning you were going to do it. So yeah, I don't know what that is inside of me that it's like, no, I must compete. But yeah, I guess I have that drive.
I mean, are you competitive in general?
It depends. If it's something like, is something I don't care about, no. Like if it's sports, I'm not good at sports. I have no hand-eye coordination. You'll never see me get competitive. But if it's something that, you know, I'm excited about or I'm good at, then I'm like, yeah, like let's compete. Let's do it.
I can definitely see that. And you seem to genuinely have fun, at least at the tip battle, because you did have your canned puns, but you delivered them well while obviously executing on stuff. I would not want to do the tip battle. Like I look at that, I'm just like, oh, this is not for me. I do not want to do this.
I mean, to be real, I mean, when Iron Viz came around, I thought this isn't for me. When the tip battle came around, I thought this isn't for me. And then somehow they both were. So you never know.
My thing is more finding a topic, and I like to talk about it, which is something I never thought I would have enjoyed very much earlier in my life.
Yeah. But
I don't know. It's like I'm always looking for more opportunities to speak. So I spoke at like a ton of tugs the other year. I even did two the same day once.
Wow.
Which I think is a record.
That's, yeah.
But that was mostly due to me not paying too much attention when booking them. Not like an intentional, willful act. But
hopefully they were both virtual.
Yeah. No, it's like, oh God, I have to get to Cleveland
to run across town.
Yeah. So it's always fun to look for new opportunities and topics to speak about. And I think it's one of the interesting challenges about talking about data and data visualization, because your topics can be so wide ranging from like specific cases to like, you know, your personal experiences and what you learned and how to do stuff better, or like purely technical and instructional. And finding different ways to do that. And I mean, my presentation at Tableau Conference, I had signed up for 20 minutes and they gave me 40. So I had a 20 minute premise that I got to figure out how to expand to 40 later.
Expand to 40.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was heavily biographical, because it was about like, here's what I learned about how to learn.
Yeah.
And the feedback was really good, with the exception of one person who's like, it felt like they mostly want to talk about himself. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I don't know how to tell that without it being, you know, I mean, I could tell someone else's story, but then it's so it was a tricky thing, but it's like I'm not upset by that or anything. But yeah, it's one of those things where like I learned some stuff about how was best for me to learn, and take from this what you can, but here's some things that are definitely helpful. Like, you have to find stuff that gets you excited and makes you want to do it more, like you've obviously done. you have to find some other people that are doing it and learn from their work and, you know, work together with them. And you also have to find some way of explaining and teaching some of that to someone else too, because you're always going to struggle with really understanding something until you have to explain it to someone else that doesn't know it. Because trust me, you really think you know stuff and then you have to explain it. You're like, oh, I don't really know how this works. I just kind of do it. Okay.
That's so true. We've been doing a lot of internal trainings at work. And I've been tasked with, you know, help, you know, teaching some of our analysts. And as soon as I go to put something together, I'm like, yeah, I know fixed LODs. I'm like, oh, I guess I have to brush up a little bit because I don't know them as well as I thought I did. Or the same thing with dynamic zone visibility. We're doing a training next week. I was like, okay, I really got to make sure I understand this to tell someone else how to do it.
It's wild and it's challenging and it's really great personally because it does make you does help you grow so much. But I mean, so much of this, like even having a Tableau public profile or, you know, sharing your work or standing on stage doing a tip battle, much of it is about vulnerability and accepting that you might fail publicly sometimes. Mm-hmm. And
oh, I was terrified to put my first, basically send my first tweet that had public, you know, Tableau content in it. I sat there like with my hand over the mouse button for a long time. Like, no, I don't want to publish this. I don't want to do it. And then I finally just did it and it was all good things. So
you realize how crazy that sounds now.
I know.
Based on sort of, you know, not to always trot out like Iron Viz champion, you know, it's like, it sounds so silly, but it's such a common thing because especially feeling like you don't necessarily know the social norms or what the expectations are. People going to jump on me and make fun of my stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, especially too, I got Twitter just for Tableau. And I think, you know, before that, my mentality around Twitter was that it was just this like super negative space on the internet where everyone hated each other and they told you that. So I was like, I'm going to put this on Twitter where people are just going to yell at me and be mean. Like, why would I do that?
Well, hold on. Have I got a site for you? Have you tried Reddit? No.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, you're not wrong. And it's like, that's the thing. I think so many places can sort of have a reputation of toxicity or, you know, a certain, you know, responsiveness. And I think a lot of that is algorithmically outrage, anger, and fear are most heavily rewarded. And I think it's kind of universal, unfortunately, across a lot of platforms. So whatever gets the most people upset gets the most, you know, shares, the most likes, the most comments, and then it, you know, precipitates more. And if you interact with it, you're going to get more of that. So like, I don't know why, but my Google feed, like I've got like the Google, you know, feed, which shows me various stuff. I get a lot of things about people getting poisoned and in car accidents.
Oh.
And I have no idea why, because I've never once opened any of them. And I'm always trying to get off of those lists. But it's like, guess what? Some people got poisoned in Michigan. I'm like, why are you telling me this? What? Like, I don't live in Michigan. I'm not interested in poison. And I have no reason to know this. But the fact that it's being served to us, I think it can really affect your view of the world because
absolutely.
There's always been people getting poisoned, but I didn't know about people getting poisoned in Michigan before. I would only know if people got poisoned here. So when you hear 10,000 cases of people getting poisoned, as I do all the time now, and it's probably going to be more because my phone's listening, you know. It's like
you're gonna get even more poison stuff now.
Yeah, so you gotta find ways to fill your varying feeds with stuff that's positive and edifying and encouraging. And it's like that's what, you know, data can be in a lot of ways because people are sharing their little passion projects and you know stuff that, you know, excited them, taught them something and learned. So I don't know. It's kind of cool that, you know, we can bump back against the entropy of the Michigan poisonings in the world a little bit, you know.
Well, I think too, the people who are on Twitter using it for Tableau purposes they're a different breed, right? It's a much more supportive and professional network of people than I think just the normal Twitter sphere.
You know, and I appreciate that it's fun. And it's one of the reasons I don't jibe very well with LinkedIn because I feel more enabled to be myself. And I think that's one of the transformations for me. When I stopped making vizs, I thought other people would like. And when I started not trying to be something, you know, and I was just like, you know, I like movies. I like nerdy stuff. I'm just going to talk about that. And whether I'm talking about that in a viz or in general, at least I'm consistent because that's what I'm into, you know, and you know, a lot of people engaged and responded with it. And it made me happy because it's what I wanted to talk about. So I got to talk about the stuff I was actually into more. Like at one point, I remember like early and sort of being on Twitter, I'm like, should I like look up more stuff and repost things just because, you know, that would mean I'm talking about data more often. And I was very quickly like, that's ridiculous. Like, why do I care about that? Like, I'm not doing this for numbers. I'm doing it because I'd like to actually talk about stuff I think is interesting. Yeah. You know, it's like there's this whole like, you know, being an influencer for the sake of being an influencer thing, which seems to be very pervasive in culture right now. And it's like, or what if you just talked about the stuff you really cared about, like the to the level that you feel comfortable, and then just did that, you know, it didn't worry about like how many people responded or whatever, you know, would it be great to have like three people that really liked it and you could talk to about it rather than like 1,000 people that just clicked a button and didn't say anything?
Yeah, that's kind of my mentality is I'm just doing this stuff because I enjoy it. And if I bring other people joy from it, awesome. Like, right, if three people like it, that's three people that were, you know, influenced by it or whatnot. So that's kind of always my goal is if nobody likes it, okay, fine. I did, so.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, especially if you're not doing this for money. This isn't your job. No. Like you're doing this on the side. Now you're getting better, you know, you're getting smarter, you're getting faster off it and everything. But like, yeah, it's, if you're not enjoying it, like what's the point? That's always been my thing. Like once I realized, you know, doing some of the community activities that I was just sort of doing by default weren't making me happy. And that's not their fault. It just wasn't my thing. And I'm like, well, I'd better just find my thing. And sometimes that's more work. Like you said, sometimes you have to go and find those data sets or make them yourself and that sort of thing. But that's also kind of its own reward. Like you feel a sense of accomplishment and you probably learned something about how to put together a data set better than the last time you did it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you on the community projects. I like them because, you know, it's just an easy data source right there for you. Yeah. You can jump right in. You don't usually have to do any cleaning or anything. But then it's also you're kind of limited, your hands are tied to whatever the topic is. And there were a lot of times in the beginning where I would be like, okay, I have to do this makeover Monday. And then I'm like, why? I don't like this topic. Why would I do it? So, yeah.
Yeah. Some of the worst public visits I made because I wanted to be like part of the conversation. I wanted to be involved and I wanted to do the thing, but I didn't really care about it.
Yeah.
So I tried to find a way to make it interesting to me. And I end up making really heinous or bad or dumb charts. And I look at those and I keep them up as a reminder. It's like, this is what you made when you didn't care about it, you know, so make sure if you're doing stuff that it's stuff that's worthwhile and sort of, you know, keeps you going.
Yeah, completely.
Well, Lisa, this has been absolutely fabulous. I have a 9-year-old that is going to kick open my door in a swimsuit and demand that I take her swimming in very short order. It hasn't happened yet, but it's coming. So to that end, is there anything you would like to shout out or promote or anyone you want to thank or like, are you selling anything?
No, I'm not selling anything. I mean, I will just give a big thank you to the community. I feel like, you know, like I said, I didn't know anything. I felt like I didn't know anything when I was just using Tableau for work and just finding this network of people has been kind of, you know, life-changing, really, to be dramatic about it. You know, I wouldn't have known about IronViz. I wouldn't have had the confidence to enter had it not been for the entire data fam. So just a thank you to everyone for being so supportive and caring and not mean tweeting me when I sent my first tweet.
What am I going to say that's better than that?
Thanks
for talking today,
mic
right?
Drop moment.
Yeah, like you win. You win the podcast.
Competitive Lisa's out.
Right. You're like, boom, mic drop.